50 years after Brown v. Board of Education comes a retrospective study that examines school desegregation through the eyes of those who actually lived through it. The study examines the high school class of 1980, whose graduates entered kindergarten in 1966 and 1967, on the front end of America's social experiment with integration. Researchers interviewed hundreds of those students, now in their 40s, about the lasting effects of their experience with race in school. Amy Stuart Wells is a professor at Teachers College, Columbia University. She's also the lead author of the report. It looked at schools in Austin, Texas, Inglewood, New Jersey, Pasadena, California, Shaker Heights, Ohio, Topeka, Kansas, and Charlotte, North Carolina.
And the most interesting finding from our data and these many, many years of interviews and tracking people down was that even people who'd had some problems in the schools, and it wasn't always easy for them to enter these schools and to try to meet people who were from different backgrounds, but pretty much everyone we interviewed, with a couple small exceptions, said this was really a valuable experience. And I feel like it took finding them 20 years later in order for them to completely appreciate what this experience had meant to them, that they had to have had these years after high school to fully appreciate how it had changed them in fundamental ways. And they were constantly comparing themselves to spouses or friends of the same racial background who hadn't had desegregated experiences.
What was the lasting effect of that experience?
Well, the interesting thing is, and this is something that they carry with them individually, but the irony here is that they felt like by having those experiences in schools and feeling more comfortable in a diverse society that they had been prepared for, quote-unquote, the real world. But the irony really was that they found the real world to be much more segregated than their high schools were. They talk about going on to college for those who went on to college and finding the college campuses very segregated physically and in terms of the social groups that students joined, whether it was fraternities and sororities or other extracurricular activities, which had actually been the more integrated settings in the high schools. And there were instances where students of different racial backgrounds from the same high school had gone to the same college, and they weren't able to maintain their friendships on those campuses because the students were so divided. Then as they went on into adulthood, we find that the majority of the white graduates in particular are living in fairly segregated neighborhoods, predominantly white neighborhoods. And only about 56% of the African Americans are living in desegregated neighborhoods. And even 20% of those say that their neighborhoods are constantly changing and that whites are moving out. And this is really reflected in the national data we have from the 2000 census on housing in the United States, that it's remained very segregated.
So they were fundamentally changed by this experience, but it had a much more limited impact on the society as a whole.
Right. And I think our study speaks to kind of what is the role of schools in society and how much burden can we put on the schools to change these color lines and the segregation that's so much a part of our history and lives on today in our housing markets. I think it's a statement that it was important that the schools did this because the students who lived through it fundamentally valued it and said it was one of the most important experiences of their lives. But clearly it wasn't enough. The rest of society had to be working towards these goals as well, and that just didn't happen.
Now, these graduates from 1980 are now in their early 40s. I imagine that many of them have families of their own. What kind of schools are they choosing for their children?
Well, that's interesting. About 60% of the white graduates describe their children's schools as predominantly white and not racially diverse at all, whereas close to 3/4 of the black and Latino graduates describe their children's schools that way. There's a kind of a dual consciousness that while they valued their own experience in desegregated schools, it's much more of a struggle for them to find those kinds of schools for their children today. And that's partly because desegregation policies have been dismantled. The newer choice policies that have been developed in the 1990s have not created incentives or support for diverse schools, so they're harder to come by. And they also talk a lot about the pressure today. This quote kept coming up in our data about this is a different time than the 1970s, and there's much more pressure on parents to put their kids in schools that have very high test scores. And while they value diversity, that the accountability system is really pushing them towards the schools with the highest test scores, and those are often not diverse schools.
Of the districts that you looked at, what's happened since? Well, first of all, were they under desegregation orders at the time, and what's happened since? Are the schools more or less diverse than they were in 1980?
The schools that we studied were under different kinds of policies that made them diverse. Some were court-ordered, some were, you know, student assignment, voluntary assignment plans, and some were these relationships they had with other districts. So it was a mix. But what we found actually is that 3 of the 6 schools have lost virtually all of their white population due to white flight, and 2 of the other schools are kind of on the verge of losing a large number of white students. And one school, actually, Topeka High School in Topeka, seems to be maintaining its diversity and is still seen as a quality school. Interestingly enough, that's the state in which the accountability system seems to be putting less pressure on parents to chase these high test scores.
The students' assessment of their experience and with diversity is one measure of this social experiment. But if you combine that with the test scores, which show a persistent achievement gap between white students and students of color, white flight that continues now to this day. If you take all these things together and look at this experiment with integration, was it a success, or are there much more mixed results?
The research literature on student achievement and desegregation was somewhat mixed, and I think in our data we can see why, because it was handled differently in different schools, and there was probably more support for students of color in some desegregated schools than others. But overall, the black-white test score gap closed more during the years of school desegregation than any other era. So, and now it's starting to widen again as we're seeing more segregation in the schools. I don't think we can say it was an educational failure, and I think if we listen to these graduates who actually lived through it, there was something fundamentally important about it. And while we'll probably never go back to an era of mandatory reassignment of students, we can certainly look at the current policies we have around school choice and say, couldn't we foster more diversity in public education today? It's valued in our society. It's valued by the people who live through it. And why can't we use the current policies to achieve that goal?
Amy, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Amy Stewart Wells is professor of sociology of education at the Teachers College, Columbia University. She's also author of the report How Desegregation Changed Us: Lessons from 6 American High Schools and the Class of 1980.